You're listening to episode 342 of A New World Order. This is Klaatu. Today we're going to take a little listener feedback, and after that we will talk about the EC tool, which of course is from the AP software series of Sarner. So first up, listener feedback was one from Pinero, who has emailed the show before, so you may recognize the handle. She's from Mastodon. So she says, episode 340 has gotten me thinking about Java. One thing you might be missing is object-oriented programming versus procedural programming. Some people don't like Java because they want to see it in time, rush, and mess with all some abstraction. Although Java is horrible, programs written on Python, external POSIX, Y, and Z, Python C are equally as monolithic and wireless overhead. Either way, it's my plan to enjoy writing and to try to build Java for me, an amateur programmer. I have one object-oriented program that programming languages like Python. I really identify with this actually, and I'm really glad that I can be brought this to my attention, because it is something that I didn't feel the edge from that conversation that I had with myself comparing Java to Python. And that important element is what I think of as sort of reverse engineerability. By which I mean, if you write, for instance, a Bash script, I feel like Bash, honestly, is a sort of basic Bash, honestly, is a very readable and understandable language to the point that you can almost teach it to yourself. There's a huge caveat there that is you have context for how Linux works and how commands work and so on. But a lot of the Bash phrases are pretty well constructed and pretty easy to understand, at least sort of let's call it actually the POSIX compliant portions of Bash tend to be. I mean, there's some POSIX compliant stuff in there that isn't super easy to understand, and a lot of the Bashisms definitely are not easy to understand. Double bracket dash e foo double bracket pipe do something here is not super easy to understand, and it gets worse than that with expansion, name expansion, or substring replacements, or extraction. It can get pretty ugly, and I think this is an important thing to understand, and that is that you know the internet, for instance, taught a lot of us sort of how code worked, and when I say how code worked, I mean HTML. You know, there are a lot of people out there who kind of came into a better understanding of computing by reading HTML and by making little modifications to other pages that someone else has constructed. You know, you copy the code and paste it into a text document, and you save it and open it up in Firefox, and you realize you've just altered the thing that you had seen before. And it's a really cool and amazing experience. And I think that kind of experience should be open, and I use that word significantly, to everyone. So, especially in open source, I feel like we kind of have a little bit of a, as part of our mission statement, to ensure that ease of entry is available to anyone who wants to sort of dip their toe into computing. And that's a tall order. That's not something that's easy to ask of technology, really. But we keep talking about how technologically advanced we are and how great things have become, and yet we are still struggling, I think, with that sort of that backwards compatibility with noobs. And I say that in a loving way. Someone who wants to get into computing, they should have something out there that they can open up and read and kind of start to learn how it's all done. And I don't know that it's common for someone to open up, for instance, C code or Java code or even Python, to be honest, but I'll get to that in a moment, and just think, okay, well, I see how this is done. I think I can do this. Whereas with Bash scripting, I have, speaking from experience, I feel like you can really kind of get into the whole computing thing just by looking at people's Bash scripts, looking at the way that your computer starts up in the first place. You know, all of these configurations and these plain text files, it's huge. It's a huge part of open source, I think. So it's important. It is very important. Now, I think the reason that this point was omitted from my Python versus Java discussion is that I don't know that the promise of Python as a simple programming language that anyone can pick up, I don't know that that is currently necessarily fulfilled. I mean, I say that, and yet I've taught Python to young children. So I know for a fact that it is something that literally like 10-year-olds can pick up and do. They can understand it. They can grow to understand it with proper training. But I feel like you have to sort of insist on making it be that way. And that there's a push or a pull maybe in the Python community right now to make Python a really, you know, quote, proper language. And it's an important thing. I mean, they kind of have to do that because Python is being used for everything now. And it's great because it's an easy programming language to write. It is something that is a real pleasure in many ways to be able to sit down and just do Python. It's a very relaxed environment. You've got a lot of great tools at your disposal. You don't have to remember a bunch of kooky and crazy syntax rules. I mean, you do, but you also don't. It is a very relaxed language, but it's being used in a lot of stuff, so it has to take itself very seriously. But I think as languages do that, I think there is a tendency for them to kind of accidentally pull away from that, hey, look, you can just open this up and read us like it's an English sentence. It'll be self-explanatory. And I just don't know that Python is really that language anymore. And I don't know, maybe this is something, you know, I haven't been in computing that long. Maybe this is a cycle. Maybe this is something that happens. Programming's come up, and they're beginner-friendly, and they're really simple, and they're treated that way. But then people start taking it really seriously, and it starts to get used for really important things, and all of a sudden everyone needs to come up with specifications for how things are properly done, and you've got all these different, you know, you got this formalization that just wasn't there in the beginning, and that can be pretty difficult for a new person to come into. Like, if a new person stumbles into the professional side of Python, I don't think they're going to see a Bash-like scripting language that they can easily read and reverse engineer. They're going to see object-oriented code with decorators and class instantiations and all of them constructors and all the things that you do in an object-oriented language that truly makes no sense without a whole lot of context. And that's kind of what a lot of Python is now. I mean, even simple things, like an example that I've kind of noticed recently, pip. You know, pip, it's the package manager for Python. It's been around for a while. If you want a Python library and you don't want to get the Python library from your package, your software repository, because you're afraid that the software repository is too old of a version of that library, or maybe you want to manage your libraries in a virtual environment, so you just want to do it locally, whatever, pip is your answer, right? So you do pip install foo. Yeah? No, you don't. So now Python is saying that, you know, sort of Python, meaning sort of like, I don't know, the governing body of Python, the official Python method of using pip now is Python-n pip install foo. And that's because pip is essentially a module, and when you're executing pip on its own, that's a deprecated action, and it's treating it like an application, whereas Python or pip, somebody, turned it into a library or a module, and that's the appropriate way to execute pip now. And once again, this is an important and great thing that they're doing, because now, you know, if you're telling your users, hey, look, I don't want you to write applications, I want you to write libraries, and that way we all have a collection of really, really useful libraries that we can borrow from each other, and less work has to be done by each of us, and that's obviously a great thing. At the same time, it's a really advanced topic. It's an advanced concept for someone who just wants to make their computer and do whatever, stay awake while they're watching a movie, but they don't want to turn off their screensaver settings, or maybe they want a little calculator that they want to program themselves, you know, whatever. They want something of their own, and they don't understand how to make those things a library. They don't even understand how to get Python out of a single file, because the book that they were reading told them, you know, has only covered putting everything in one file. So, in other words, what I'm saying is that while it's really cool to say that object-oriented is indeed an advanced topic and something that is not let's say, user-friendly or new user-friendly anyway, which I totally agree with. I don't know that I agree with the idea, for instance, that Python is any longer the embodiment of that. I think Python is kind of your bog standard object-oriented programming language now. Anyway, there are important exceptions here, and I'm going to address them right now. So one is that, well, Python still offers the opportunity for people to ignore all of those standards and things, and to write what they can, and that's great because you can't really do that in Java, right? If you want to write a simple Java script that's not object oriented, you can't just write that. You have to make a main class. You have to do all of these things. Oh, but wait, maybe that's not exactly true, because there are subsets of Java that do enable simplified scripting practices. So for instance, processing.org. If you go to processing.org, you can download their little IDE. It's a simplified Java, essentially Java, well, it's a simplified Java IDE is what it is. And it sets you up with, I think, two classes or two functions, really. There's a start, I think, or a setup, and a run, or a loop, whatever they call it. And the setup is where you set up all of your variables, and maybe you import some libraries that you need, whatever you need to do there. That's kind of the run once section. And then after that, after it runs the setup once, when you press go, then it looks to the loop, the run, whatever they call it. We'll call it a loop. And that just loops through that function. So whatever you do there, of course, it's going to keep repeating. And from there, you can jump off and make your own functions and so on. So it's a lot like, if I dare say, it's like Lua in a way, where you've got sort of your basic functions that you can kind of count on running. And that, I didn't mean Lua, sorry. I meant Love, the graphical game interface for Lua. Where you've got your main function that you know that it's going to run once for your setup, and your loop, where you know whatever you put into that loop, it's going to show up on the Love, the little screen that you're exporting after you're programming it. So it's really, really nice. It is retroactive. It's fixing sort of user interface errors with the Java language. Processing.org is where it's at. You should check it out. And it's great. It's fantastic. And I think that the opportunity there for languages, as they become more complex, the opportunity to make sure that there's that entry-level version of that language is a really important thing and a very noble effort. And I'm sure there are really good ones that do that for Python still. My fear is that Python has a reputation for being very beginner-friendly, but it has moved on from that niche. And I don't know that we have that niche filled in such a way that we can separate it from Python. In other words, if you're a new user or a new programmer and you want to get into something and you hear a lot of buzz about Python, and so you go and search out whatever resource you can on Python. Unfortunately for you, in this timeline, you stumble into a group of people who take Python very seriously and are all about the standards and are really into the object-oriented side of Python and how it should be done properly, and everything needs to be a library or a class, and so on. And I don't think that serves those most new programmers, like self-taught programmers. Whereas in a different timeline, maybe you stumble into Python and you stumble into a group of people who are teaching the friendly version of Python, the one where nothing matters and all you need to do is figure out how to make stuff appear on your screen, and if you do it all in one big file with no functions whatsoever, no classes, that's fine, that's great, good for you. Now we'll introduce you to functions and then we'll see where it goes from there. That's brilliant. I think that's a great thing, but I don't know that, you know, like the problem is that you're faced, you go to this door and it's labeled Python, and you just don't know which of those two realities you're going to find on the other side of the door. You're going to open it up, and you're going to go into something that's calling itself Python, and you don't know which Python you're getting. Whereas with Java, I guess, you kind of know what you're getting, right? You go into Java, and you're getting the super serious Java stuff, like the boring Java programming, serious coding. That's what you're in for. And so I wouldn't tell a new programmer to go look at Java as their first language. Just wouldn't do it. Would I refer them to processing.org? Yeah, actually I would. I think that's a great starter. Would I refer them to the Python equivalent of that? Yes, if I knew what that was. So I think that's actually my problem, is that I don't feel like languages are necessarily identifying clearly where the beginners can get on board. And of course there are different beginners, right? There are people who are going into programming because, well, they're ready for programming. They've taken math classes and they know what a function is already, and they know that concept and they're ready for this. And then there's people who stumble into it because they have to for work, or because they think it would be fun if they want to someday become a video game programmer. They don't know how to get there, but they've heard that they need to learn how to code to start down that path, you know, that sort of thing. So we got to identify these use cases and kind of make it clearer for people, hey, this is the path you need to start out on. Okay, you can start out over here. And I guess Bash, for instance, makes it pretty clear generally. Probably not necessarily because it means to, but probably partly because of POSIX compliancy, actually, because a lot of the POSIX stuff is pretty clear, I think. And yeah, you get into Bash and you just kind of, you're at the beginner level. I think it's a great starter language. And yeah, I agree. I guess I'm saying I agree. Object-oriented is not user-friendly, is not new user-friendly. And we need to clearly identify who we're targeting with different sort of versions, air quotes around that, of various programming languages. Okay, that's the listener feedback section. It's time for coffee. Let's do that, and we'll come back and we'll talk about BC. Okay, BC, this is a GNU utility from the AP software series of Slackware. I feel like we've all kind of heard of BC. It's one of those commands that I feel like it kind of shows up fairly frequently on the sort of, I don't know, those posts online where you ask an intelligent question and you get a technically valid answer, but it's not like the best answer. Do you know what I mean? It's one of those where someone clearly does some kind of research into a thing, and then they do answer the question, and then they put it online, and you think, why would you answer that question that way? Like that is obviously not the sort of the best answer, or at least it's not a complete answer. So here's the canonical example of BC, right? The question is always, how do I add two numbers in Bash or from a terminal? And the inevitable answer is echo, quote, 1 + 1, close quote, pipe, BC. And you get 2 back. And you think, great, that's fantastic. And it's completely unusable, right? I mean, nobody wants to do that for a calculation, especially nothing advanced. You want to do complex math by echoing something, yeah, by echoing the phrase and piping it through BC. That's just ridiculous. So I didn't know much about BC, to be honest, and I avoid it typically. I did remember an article on opensource.com about from 2016 by Dave Taylor, who I know that name, I don't know the person, from Linux Journal, back when that was a thing. And there's this article about an interactive calculator for the Linux command line. And it's kind of a sort of hack around ever having to use BC. And that's kind of funny because I feel like a lot of the things online that I do find about BC are either that stupid echo example that I just referenced, you know, just echoing two numbers and piping it through BC, or it's a hack around just not not having to use BC. And even in the comments of this article, there are a bunch of, there are some great comments, but it's all about how not to use BC. There's one from a person named Wei Lun Chao, who says that they developed a pure bash calculator. And there's a link to the code, which is a dead link now, but I did a little bit of digging and found the updated version of it. It is quite nice. I will post a link to the updated version in the show notes. There's someone else who says, hey, just use Perl. And or someone else says, hey, use Python. So there, and Python, to be fair, is the one that I kind of default to. I just launch a Python shell, I do the math that I need to do, and then I get out of a Python shell. It's kind of stupid, but it kind of works. So BC, it's a little bit of a problem. And the more I kind of looked around to find what BC was really for, the less I discovered. I don't know, that is to say, I don't know whether BC is sort of targeted as kind of a data science kind of tool, for lack of a better term. Like, is it GNU Octave? Is it NumPy? Is it, like, what exactly is the, what's the target use case here? And I don't know enough about any of those worlds to even recognize, you know, any kind of similarity or even just to kind of get a feel for what someone might see in BC. Well, as is often the case, there's documentation for this tool, and we can look at that and discover quite a lot about the little tool called BC. And that's exactly what I did. So if you go to gnu.org/software/BC, you'll find links to the documentation. It's very elucidating. It doesn't answer my question of sort of who uses this for what. But then again, I don't know that the documentation could possibly know that. I don't know why someone writing documentation for BC, or even the person who writes BC, would know necessarily what people are doing with the tool. And I guess maybe I could look at the bug tracker or something like that and really try to get a feel for what problems people are having with the tool and what it is that they are trying to answer with the tool. But I didn't do that because it's not that much of a burning question for me. Really, what we're here for is to understand more about BC, the command. So first of all, I'm going to say I don't believe that BC is honestly meant as a command. I mean, obviously it is. They didn't accidentally include in the BC command that can launch. You know, they didn't do that on accident. But I don't think that was their main use case, their main sort of intent of how you would interact with BC. So aside from echoing things into BC, and you can like echo one pipe BC and it'll spit out one back at you. So it's a pretty sort of, it's not a very useful filter, really. You know, it just doesn't do that much. Instead of doing that, or rather in addition to doing that, you could just write, or you could just issue the command BC that spits out some copyright and licensing information at you, and it dumps you into a completely empty session, sort of interactive session with BC. You can type stuff like, I don't know, 20 minus 5, 15, it answers. 23 times 8, 184. So all kinds of things you can do here. It's basically a calculator. That's kind of fun. So let's try advanced functions, like, I don't know, cosine. So I'm going to just do COS, assuming that this won't work, but pretend like we're just kind of hacking around, messing around. So COS, parentheses 90, close parentheses. Runtime error doesn't work. Okay, so that's a no-go. So we'll quit. We'll type out quit. And then we'll look at the man page really quick. And we see from the man page that there aren't actually that many options here. You can do the interactive mode. You can force the interactive mode. We don't have to force it, we just got it anyway. You can do a dash dash math lib to define the standard math library. You can also do dash dash standard to be more POSIXly correct. And that's about it, really. There's a couple of other things in there, but it's not really that big of a deal. So if we do bc dash dash math lib, we discover that we get, well, now we're back into the interactive session. So it's a little bit like Python. If you've ever played around with Python, type in Python, and you're at this sort of Python prompt, and you're inside of this thing called idle, and you can try out your different Python commands or Python statements that you want to see what they render. So this is a little bit like that. And of course, we can do the math, the simple math still. That still works. But with Mathlib, we inherit some extra little functions. And those functions are described in the manual. I'll go back to the first page over here. And there's down near the bottom, after it describes the language itself, which we'll get into in a minute, there is a list of math library functions. And sure enough, my math library functions, not there there are it's not blowing me away here, but there are some. So there's s parentheses x close parentheses, and that'll give you the sine of x in radians. C in parentheses x, the cosine of x. A is the arctangent. L is the natural log. E is the exponential function of raising e to the value of x. And then J is the, I don't even know how to say this. That's how far beyond my math understanding this already is. The Bessel function of integer order in and x. Sounds exciting. Okay, so I'll go to back to BC here, and we'll just do a C parentheses 90, and that gives me negative 0.4480736, which sounds roughly correct to me, given no other information. I'll just type into a web search engine here, what is the cosine of 90? That did not work. All right, I'll go to a different web engine with a little bit better instant calculations. Yeah, negative zero. Oh yeah, negative 0.4480376 and a couple other numbers. So yes, that does appear to be correct. So already we've got a couple of bonuses here. We've got some new functions that you can play around with. You can also define your own functions, and that is done with the define keyword. And you can create well, a function just like you would in any other programming language, except of course you've got to think in terms of, I guess, in terms of the BC abilities. So for instance, we can do maybe an absolute value function. Let's do that. So we'll do a define ABS and then parentheses N close parentheses, and then we'll do a curly bracket, a curly brace, and then we'll hit return. I don't know if that return's actually necessary, but I'm hitting return there. It's probably not. Returns, new lines do have significance in BC, but I don't think it needs to be a new line in that particular case. So the first phrase that we'll write is, we'll detect whether the number is greater than zero, because if it's greater than zero, then we can just spit back out the number, right? The absolute value of one is one. There's no modification needed there. So, and in case you're not aware, absolute value, I actually don't know the purpose of it. I'm not mathematically inclined. I don't know the actual use of this. I mean, I can imagine, but I don't know, like, if there's a definitive answer. But the absolute value, you take a number expressed either as a negative number or a positive number, and then you return just the number. With no sort of connotation about whether it's negative or positive. It's just the absolute value, the converted value of this integer that you're giving me. Here's the integer. So I feel like that's got to be like the equivalent of some of the more unusual, bash checks, when you're looking for, I don't know, the real path of something, and you think to yourself, well, why would the path of this file be any different than, the path, like the location of the file after PWD. It's just kind of like this weird reinforcement. So, I mean, I'm sure there's a very good reason for it in math. So anyway, so if the syntax in BC is if, and then parentheses for the condition that you're checking for. So if, in this case, if parentheses n is greater than or equal to zero, So that's the greater than sign and the equal sign and the zero. And then close the parentheses. There is no then. You just do if, and then the condition, and then a space, and then the then condition. So in this case, it would be return, parentheses, n, close parentheses. And then we'll do a new line to close that phrase. So there's no close to the if statement. There's no if phi. There's no curly braces required. It's just you write a line and you do a new line. You can do more scoping than that, but that's all that's necessary in BC. And then, so instead of even bothering with like an else statement, we can just put return parentheses negative n, close parentheses, and then close the curly bracket. So then I'll hit return. And that, now that because I'm in this interactive session, that becomes part of my session. And we can test it with ABS, parentheses, negative 8, close parentheses, and we get back 8. That's correct. ABS, 12, and we get back 12, so that's correct as well. So there you go. There, we've created our first function, and we've invoked that function. And we've also seen how the if statements work. Now, like I say, you can actually do that with sort of more, I guess, clearer scoping. So for instance, if we redefine this, and just to make sure that I'm not clobbering something or cheating, I'll do abso as this function. And we'll give it in again just for the input. It wants to get a number from us. And then I'll do a curly brace, and then I'll do if phrase in is greater than or equal to 0, close parentheses, and then I'll do a space, and I'll do an open curly brace there, and do a return in, and I'll close that curly brace. So the scope of that if statement is just sort of, you know, it's just going to return that number if the statement is true. There's really no else as far as I know, so then I'll just do a return negative n, because we're negating the negative if it's not positive, and then we'll close the curly brace. And so now if I do abso negative 2, I get back 2, abso 2, I get back 2. So it works perfectly just as well. It's kind of up to you, which is nice. I mean, I think that's a nice feature to give people a little bit of an option in terms of coding style. I quite like that. Let's see, I think we saw a function in the GNU manual for a factorial, didn't we? No, I'm sorry, we saw exponential. All right, well, it's not as fun. I mean, it probably is as fun. I'm not that good at math, to be honest. So I'm kind of stretching myself by trying to write math functions. It's not something that comes really natural to me. Okay, so interestingly, I mean, you can certainly create variables. So if I do, if I just say foo equals, 23, and then type in foo, I get 23 back. So that's easy variable expansion or analysis, investigation, introspection, is that the term? I don't know. It's easy. It's simple variable structures, not that hard. There are also all the usual math operators like greater than and equal to, greater than or equal to, and there are logical operators like the or and the and so on. I'm going to quit this, and I'm going to create, we're going to create a file called bcvars.bc. And in this bcvars file, we're going to look up what is the speed of light, and it looks like it's pretty fast. So we'll do speed of light, SOL, equals 299.792.458. We'll just do that as one string. And then we'll do foo equals 42. And I guess we could even say define abs. We'll do that program really quick again. Because I think, if we're lucky, we'll be able to get all of this stuff into our interactive session. Okay, perfect. All right, so we've got this file of sort of BC variables and a function. So normally this is where we would think, okay, well, in a BC script, we want to include the data from from this file, so we'll import it. Unfortunately, I can't find anything about importing or including or loading or sourcing or requiring. I mean, I looked for all the keywords and I legitimately cannot find how to include an external data source in BC. If you know how to do that, by all means, let me know. The way that I've sort of more or less discovered doing it is just to BC, and then I'll open up, I'll do Mathlib, and then I'll also do bcvars.bc. That launches one of those little fake interactive sessions with BC. And now if I issue the variable foo, it tells me, yep, yeah, it's 42. If I do SOL, it returns 299792458. If I do, what was it, abs minus 128, it returns 128. So all of the data in bcvars.bc was loaded into my session. So I mean, that's a lot like including it. I get to include it along with the normal mathlib. So if I do, for instance, C for cosine, remember, and then foo, I get back negative dot 39999985 31, which I'm assuming is the cosine of 42. So you know, I get everything that I need. I don't know how to make that happen without just copying and pasting an entire file into the file that you're actually running. So that puzzles me a little bit. But that's BC. That's as much as I know about BC. And honestly, that's almost all there is to BC. I mean, obviously, there's a lot more to BC than that. But in terms of approachability, if you want to just kind of get started with BC and you know math, It's astonishingly self-explanatory. Well, not self-explanatory. It's an easy read, is what I'm trying to say. The manual, if you look at it, it gives you, it's got like maybe, let's call it 5 chapters. It's got an overview of the basic elements, which include numbers, variables, and comments. It covers the expressions that are available to you. So you've got, you know, variable creation, just sort of the basic expressions, relational expressions, Boolean expressions, operator precedence. You got a couple of special expressions in there that you'd want to know about, just to have available. And then there are statements and pseudo statements. So the statements are sort of sensible things like string, print list, if, while, for, that sort of thing. No break, continue, halt, return, that return being a return value. And then there are pseudo statements, which is quit and warranty, which prints the warranty, and then limits, which prints the local limits enforced by the local version of BC. So that sort of covers things like your, I don't know, integer, you know, the longest integer you can have, or the maximum exponent you can calculate, and number of variables your system can handle, and so on. And that is, as it says, it's a local limitation, so it tells you what the machine that you're running this on is limited to. There are some examples, and that's pretty much it. And if you look at it, it is, I mean, it's, yeah, it feels and looks kind of like C. It's a C-like syntax, which, you know, I mean, sometimes that means something very bad, like that's scary, but it's not scary. Like, it's actually, it's like C syntax in a really good way. Like, it's pretty readable, as long as you're kind of, it's kind of like you know what a function is. You understand that once you define that function, you're going to call it later in code. You understand how code is processed and so on. Is it the most versatile language? I don't imagine that it is, but at the same time, I think that this I think might be what BC is all about. This is the, you know, the script, the scriptability of it, and the ability to essentially think in C but process nothing but numbers, and have a sort of a number centric view of code. I think that might be what BC is for. Like, if you're a mathematician, or if you're doing lots of math, why would you try to re-implement all of this stuff in raw C or something, when you can just have BC do it for you and figure all this stuff out for you? How essential is it? Again, I don't know. I feel like someone who knows math really well would be able to look at this and think either, oh, this is amazing. This will make my life much easier, because that way, you know, now I can get that exponent or that cosine or that sine or that log, the logarithm of this number without having to come up with the function for it myself. Or maybe someone will look at it and just think, well, it's nice, but I could just go get, you know, such and such a library for whatever language I'm using and do basically the same thing in the language of my choice. So I'm not exactly sure how sort of essential BC is. I don't know that it's something that would be widely useful to most users. I think that it is a little bit maybe oversold to the new user. It's kind of like, hey, Bash includes this really great terminal calculator. It's called BC. And it's like, yes, that's true, but are we, is this really what we are using for this? Because there, it seems like there's probably better things for this, for what I want to do. And as it turns out, there really, really is. It's this pure Bash calculator that Wai-Lun Chow wrote. It's very, very cool. You should definitely check it out. It's not BC. It doesn't use BC at all. It is just really, really neat. It's a good read. It is not an easy read. This is not one of the Bash scripts that a new user should be looking at to understand how Bash works. But it is very, very slick, and it works really, really well, and I'm really happy to have found it. And I don't mean to take away from BC. I think BC is very cool. I think it's probably very, very useful to people who know a lot more about math than I do. I don't think it's intended as a general purpose calculator, realistically, like a general purpose interactive calculator. I don't think that's what they had in mind. I could be mistaken, and it could very well be that I just don't know enough about math to even make it useful for myself. So I'm not trying to take away from BC by saying, oh, there's this cool pure Bash calculator that you should check out. I'm simply saying that BC is well beyond me. Everything I've told you about BC is what I have learned about it this week, kind of going through it, through the documentation, and unfortunately, most of it's lost on me. So if you're into math more than I am, I mean, it's not, don't get me wrong, I like math, I'm just not very good at it, so it's a question of me being ready for BC, not whether BC is ready for me. If you are ready for BC, then you should check it out. It's a very cool little programming language. You can define your own functions. What more do you want? I mean, that's all you really need in the language, right? The ability to make little subroutines. Once you do that, you're kind of programming. So yeah, that's BC. Hopefully this has shed some light on a misrepresented tool. Thank you very much for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Podcast. This has been Klaatu. You can reach me on IRC. I'm on the Freenode network, usually in channels such as Augcast Planet, Slacker Media, Slackware, a couple of others. My nick on IRC is not Klaatu. You can also reach me lately on Mastodon. My username there is @klaatu@mastodon.xyz. Of course, you can email me at klaatu@member.fsf.org. That's klaatu@member.fsf, as in Free Software Foundation.org. And of course, you can visit my various websites, gnuworldorder.info and slackermedia.info. I will see you next time. Sword Castle.